Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic novel, graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today, but with much better words than I have, is Andrew.
Hello. Yes, and I mean, to be fair, I have many of the same words as you, just better pronounced.
Yes, you can articulate much better than I can.
I say that, I feel like I've set myself up on a very high horse now.
Yeah, I know. I am waiting for you to be hoisted on your petard.
Yeah, it's certainly. I think the weight of history is not on my side on this one.
No, it's not. I am actually rubbing my hands with glee. Listen.
The show's cancelled. We're taking another week off.
So how are you this week, Andrew?
You know, I'm good. I am nice and refreshed after our week off.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
That being said, I am now ready to tear into some news because we have things to get through and opinions to be had.
Oh yes, there are opinions. There are definitely opinions.
But I think before we get to the opinions, shall we start off with something nice and light?
Go on.
Because Kevin Feige has been going around on the tour for Ant-Man and the Wasp, a film which isn't going to be in this country for like another month. Thanks, football.
I like football.
I know. But anyway, good old Kev, he's been revealing some things about the future of the MCU.
Ooh.
So first up in news, which I think is probably up there with Fire is Hot and Water is Wet, there's going to be a second Doctor Strange movie.
Hooray!
Although, interestingly, it might still be a few years off.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, they do have kind of a full slate at the moment, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They have a lot on their plate. So, the going bet is that Doctor Strange 2 will possibly be 2020 or 2021.
Okay. So all we know is that there's definitely going to be a Doctor Strange 2. We don't know anything else, though, don't we? That's correct.
No, isn't it? At some point in the future, there will be a Doctor Strange sequel, unless we are all, like, burning in the nuclear fiery hell.
Right. Okay. Well, that explains
a lot. Which I would say, you know, 50-50.
Yeah. We'll see how far. We'll see what happens with Trump, you know.
But anyway, more things. In what comic book movie have generously described as 20 huge reveals is that future Marvel movies are going to A, focus on more the newer introduced characters and characters who are going to be introduced. So, you know, the likes of Black Panther and Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Rather than all revolving around Iron Man, as they pretty much have done in the past.
I wouldn't say that was a big reveal.
I think it is good to know, though.
It is. Well, it's good to have confirmation, but I don't think it's a big reveal because we kind of already knew that.
Yeah, I feel like these huge reveals are mostly confirming things that we already knew.
Yeah. So what's next then?
Well, going with that, apparently there's going to be both a lot more female and LGBTQ characters.
Again, we kind of already knew that.
Yeah. And it's probably welcome, because bit of a sausage fest.
It is, but they still won't give us the Chelsea Kane version of Mockingbird.
Give us Bobby Morse, you cowards.
Yes, give us the Chelsea Kane version of Bobby Morse.
Oh, yeah, because Mockingbird was an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., wasn't she?
Yes.
Also, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. existed.
Yeah. Now you see why I'm being very specific saying the Chelsea Kane version.
Anyway, it also seems like potential upcoming movies are going to be the Young Avengers, which I think definitely makes sense. You know, getting a whole new younger cast that you can keep pumping out for years.
Yeah. Although, I mean, we are British, so we did have kind of the John Steed version of the Avengers. And when you said the Young Avengers, I just imagine teenage Steed in a tweed suit with a bowler hat.
Diana Rigg should play Nick Fury.
Yes. No, Nicola Fury. Yes, definitely. She'd be amazing at that.
And she could rock an eye patch.
Oh, God, yes.
Anyway, I'm going to follow that curveball up with another one.
Hello?
Because one of the other potential movies is Power Pack.
Okay, what?
Yeah, for Power Pack, I don't even really know that much about Power Pack. But see, they're a bunch of kids who get powers from alien horse people, and go off on a bunch of adventures which seem whimsical, but are also surprisingly dark sometimes.
Yeah, I remember Power Pack, and that's a bit of a left field choice. In fact, that's a very left field choice.
It is indeed. It's also interesting because apparently, I think the thinking behind Power Pack is they want something they can target towards a younger audience.
I mean, are they going with like the original series of Power Pack, which was from the 80s?
I mean, I assume they'll do what they've done with all their movies, which is kind of pick and mix from the best bits of all their history.
Because Power Pack, weren't they like a family thing? Like, you know, the Brady Bunch of superheroes, I suppose they were. No, that was the Fantastic Four. I think it was kind of the kids from the Brady Bunch all got superpowers. And
yeah, well, I believe the whole point is their last name is All Power. Hence they are the Power Pack.
Yes, I remember now. Yeah, there was that lame joke in there, wasn't there?
No, still, I think it'd be cool to have another film that's maybe a bit like Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
But, you know, as much as certain corners of the internet don't want to admit, comics are for everyone.
They are for everyone. Franklin Richards was part of Power Pack, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was, like, friends with them or something.
Yeah, they used to knock around together, and then, you know, suddenly they formed a gang. You know, not like a Crips and Bloods type gang. Let's be clear about that.
Or was it more like a West Side Story gang? Just but, Franklin Richards strolling down the street, snapping his fingers.
And just saying, look.
Also, like, every time he does it, a supernova explodes.
Yeah, and he keeps telling them, look, no, you got it wrong. It's step, kick, step, turn.
And if it isn't, he will rewrite reality to make it so.
Exactly. Because that kid was overpowered.
Well, he is supposed to be, like, the most powerful being in all of existence.
Yeah.
And it did lead to, like, possibly one of my favourite lines in comics in one issue of Fantastic Four.
Oh?
Because over the years, Galactus has had many heralds.
Yeah.
But Franklin Richards has only ever had one. That just cuts to Galactus, cuts to Franklin yelling, "Turn me, my Galactus."
Oh, that's brilliant. I like that.
I think it was about Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four, which is just...
I remember that.
You know what? Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a good way with that family. With that family unit, he had such a brilliant way with them, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, because I think, like, he was great at the family dynamics.
Mm.
And, like, his whole bread and butter is telling a huge, like, very long-form story.
Which fits with the family dynamic.
Yeah, yeah, like... That and the idea that the Fantastic Four, they deal with like these vast multiverse spanning threats.
Yeah. They're not like Spider-Man, who's a street level hero. They're not like the Avengers, who just deal with the immediate threat. Fantastic Four are basically, because at the start, one of the things I loved about Hickman's version of the Fantastic Four, it maintained the idea that they were more explorers and scientists than heroes.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Like, they will go off and they'll uncover, like, the negative zone. And, like, they'll probably end up stopping some kind of bad guy while they're there.
Yeah.
But that's more just, like, a side product of them going on a merry adventure.
Yeah. We need a new Fantastic.
I'm glad that they're coming. I guess they'll be coming back into the movies, because another thing that happened while we were off air is I believe the Marvel Fox deal has been officially finalised now.
It has. Yes, it has. So, who was it? Comcast, was it? And going to get their grubby little mitts on the X-Men.
I mean, I think their grubby mitts are quite large, actually. But still, yeah, I'm happy. And it means the movie can come out just in time to be wiped from canon.
Yes. Oh, are you saying that Thanos is just going to turn up at the end of the movie and go, I didn't like this?
Yes. Could you imagine if Marvel were that petty? Yeah. If just like their X-Men starts with Thanos wiping out the entire Fox universe.
Yes. And the thing is, these are comic books we're dealing with, and the people who run the comic book companies are comic book nerds for the most part. So yes, they are that petty. They really are.
It would be terrible and great at the same time.
It would be amazing.
And then at the end, it's just like left with Thanos and Deadpool.
Well, just kind of staring at each other. Thanos goes, I hate you so much. And Deadpool's just looking at him going, buddy, we were in a movie together. Obviously speaking to Josh Brolin.
Oh my God, Deadpool 3 is going to be wild.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, there's one last bit I can use from this story. And that's the Spider-Man Homecoming sequel, now officially being revealed to be called Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah, he goes overseas, doesn't he?
Yep, he goes overseas, and it's also been confirmed Mysterio will be the villain, but also that Jake Gyllenhaal, at the very least, hasn't been finalized in that role.
I read somewhere that, I can't remember where it was, I read somewhere that they were thinking about introducing Silk in some way.
Really? That would be...
possibly as part of Far From Home, but I'm not sure.
I could see that, maybe. Maybe bumps into her, like, in some other country.
That's what I'm thinking. I hope they do. Possibly he bumps into her, not as Silk, but as, you know, just her normal character, before she becomes Silk.
I just hope they keep Silk's habit of, like, encountering every new villain, and her opening line always being, "Are you a Pokemon?"
I forgot about that. Oh... Do you think Pokemon fans know that they're advocating slavery and animal cruelty?
I hate to break it to you, Rob, but I think perhaps you might not be the first person to bring that up.
I know. I just want to remind them. I take every opportunity to remind them.
Oh, also devil worship. Don't forget devil worship.
Oh, God, yeah. I forgot about the devil worship. Yeah. Also, guys, Professor Rock is definitely doing Ash's mum.
Thanks for bringing that up, Rob.
Anyway, shall we move on?
Also, fun fact, listeners.
Yes.
That's the second time in the course of about a week I've heard that argument.
But not from me.
Yes, from you, Rob.
No, it can't be from me.
But you literally said that verbatim last Saturday.
Did I?
You did. Oh, my God. That's... So, next news story. And we are hopping over to DC.
Hooray!
Because we now have all sorts of details about DC Universe, which is their fancy-schmancy streaming service that they're doing.
Yeah.
So apparently it is going to have a combination of new animated series, well, new animated and live action series, like the new season of Young Justice and Titans. I'll go through what all they are in a bit. They are also going to include classic DC TV shows and movies, including Batman, the animated series, and the Linda Carter Wonder Woman.
Wow.
Also, ooh. Also, apparently, all the classic Batman, Superman live-action movies, so you can get caught up on Nuclear Man before his comics debut. And also, something I'm not super a fan of.
Okay.
Because apparently, this service is going to include a library of comics, which initially sounded cool, but apparently it's going to be like a rotating selection.
Ah.
Which, I don't like that, because it's all just going to be stuff like, hey, Titans is airing. Go read, like, the first appearance of the Teen Titans and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, DC aren't really good at their marketing, are they?
Oh, I just don't understand DC. Just look at Marvel. Look at what they're doing with Marvel Unlimited. Then just do that.
Yeah, it's not rocket science, but DC seem bound and determined. I mean, look at the Free Comic Book Day, you know? Suicide Squad was coming out, so... oh, what should we do for Free Comic Book Day? Shall we give people something interesting? No! Let's give them issue one of Harley Quinn.
But she's in that movie.
Yeah. Apparently Harley can now break the fourth wall. Or so I've been told.
That's a great idea. Wacky character dressed in red and black who can break the fourth wall.
Yeah, you didn't nick that from anywhere, did you? But it was on the cover of one of the issues of Harley Quinn. That I saw in the window of Forbidden Planet, and it just says on the cover, she breaks the fourth wall! And I'm going, why?
Because wacky fun times.
And Marvel had two characters that broke the fourth wall before the DC even had the idea of applying it to Harley Quinn. In fact, no, Marvel had more than that. Most of them had, in fact, all of them have Pool in their name.
Oh no, it's like the Deadpool, Gwenpool, Williams, like She-Hulk way back in the 80s.
Oh yeah, She-Hulk did break the fourth wall, didn't she?
And actually, I think, like, one of the Captain Marvels could as well.
Yeah.
It was the kind of dumb joke that I secretly kind of love. But it turned out that he doesn't have cosmic awareness.
Yeah.
He has comics awareness.
Yeah, that's... wasn't that the son of Captain Marvel or whatever his name?
Yeah, yeah, like, Janis, I think his name was.
Yeah, Janis or Genesis.
Anyway, he's dead now, so who cares?
Yeah.
What we do care about, maybe... is all the new shows that are coming to DC Universe. So we have got Titans, which the synopsis reads for this. Young heroes from across the DC Universe. It will follow young heroes from across the DC Universe as they come of age and find belonging in a gritty take on the classic Teen Titans franchise. Oh boy.
See,
it has the word gritty in it, Rob. You know it's going to be good.
Yeah, I know. Apparently it's going to be bone-breaking and stuff like that. I read that article.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to have S-bombs, F-bombs.
My main issue with DC's on a live-action Teen Titans, right, is first with the gritty. Second is with the people that they've chosen to play the characters. I like the look of the guy who's going to be playing Beast Boy, you know?
Yeah, I think, like, of all of them, probably looks the best.
Yeah. Robin, I'm not really sold on. Looks like they're trying a bit too hard to make him gritty.
Oh, yeah, like, they've got a picture with this article, and he just looks a bit dirty, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like all those promo pictures of Arrow, where he looks like he's covered in some sort of weird grease.
Yeah. I can't remember what's her name, who's playing Raven.
Oh, yeah, I do not have a cast list with me.
Tegan something or whatever. They've got the African-American lass who's playing Starfire. And then I read that bit about Starfire, and they said, oh, she's got multiple identities and blah, 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 blah. I'm going, Starfire doesn't have multiple identities. She's an alien.
Oh, they're not doing a multiple identities thing, are they?
I think they are. I'm sitting there thinking, she's an alien. It's well documented. Starfire is an alien. She's an escaped slave. That's like in every version of the Titans. Oh God, now I understand the oh God, DC, why? Oh,
do you want to hear some betting viewers?
Yes, please, because I've just realised why they chose an African American woman to play her.
Because it was a trick. There's going to be a Harley Quinn animated series.
Oh, God. I thought you said this was going to be good news.
Yes, but then I said that was a lie.
Oh.
Apparently, Harley Quinn follows Harley's adventures after she breaks up with the Joker and strikes out on her own in this new adult animated comedy.
Oh, God, is this the Black Label thing getting animated?
It is, because with the help of Poison Ivy and a ragtag crew of DC cast-offs, Harley tries to earn a seat at the biggest table in villainy, the Legion of Doom.
And are we talking about... We're not talking about the wrestlers, then.
No, we're definitely talking about the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, the wrestlers, the Legion of Doom. Multiple-time tag team champions in, like, WWE when it was still WWF. Damn, that joke's wasted on you.
Like, you know full well I don't know the wrestlings.
Damn you, Andrew. I actually made a good joke.
Did you make a good joke, though, Rob?
Yes, it was a good joke. And if you actually watched any wrestling, you would get it.
Anyway, there's also going to be Young Justice Outsiders, Doom Patrol, and a Swamp Thing TV series, apparently, which that completely passed me by.
We knew about that. We talked about it ages ago.
Alternatively, I forgot about it.
You did forget about it.
I did forget about it.
But yeah, we actually were puzzled as to why they want... Actually, I wonder, were you actually on that episode? You might have been away. It might have just been me and Mick talking about it, so... you know, you'd be excused for not knowing about it.
Hooray, I passed. But yeah, they sound like they could be cool.
Yeah, the thing is, they tried to do a Swamp Thing TV series a couple of times before and not really succeeded.
I mean, I think they tried to do a lot of things in the 90s that didn't work well.
Yeah.
Looks at the Spawn movie.
You know.
Looks at the Captain America movie where he had rubber ears.
No. The worst one was the one where he had a crash helmet. The
fun motorbike Captain America.
Yeah.
But I also liked the fact that the shield was like his screen.
Yep. Yes, it was. So, yeah, all I'm going to say about this is I'm not looking forward to a lot of these DC things.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be fair, though, we haven't even seen, you know, trailers or anything for any of these yet, so...
Well... You know, we haven't seen trailers, but I don't know.
I just worry that, like, it seems like one of those things where the more I hear about it, the less confident I am.
Yeah. I mean, the poster that the picture that they've got for the Harley Quinn one, where she's in a bar looking like she's trying to tell a story, and you've got all sorts of other characters there.
I'm worried it looks a bit Family Guy.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe it'll be good. Maybe it won't be.
I'm
thinking things that definitely won't be good, though.
Yeah.
So, you know how, like, Morbius the Living Vampire?
Oh, the Eurotrash Vampire.
Yes. He's getting a movie.
Okay.
yay, great rejoicing, party poppers. But what's that? Who have they cast to play the title role, you ask? Why? Why, it's an Academy Award-winning actor.
Hang on, whoa, 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 whoa. Just back up, back up, back up. When you say Academy Award-winning actor, are we talking on the level of, say, Daniel Day-Lewis or Anthony Hopkins? Although Anthony Hopkins...
I mean, I guess they kind of are like Daniel Day-Lewis. They are incredibly devoted to method acting.
Okay, Christian Bale?
No, that was a different Batman.
Okay. Mm.
It's Jared Leto, Rob.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yep.
No.
Look, neither of us want it to be true, but just yelling out the word no is not going to change the fact.
No.
We're not Franklin Richards.
No. No, 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 no. What is wrong with you? Why did you pick Jared bloody Leto?
I mean, I didn't.
I know you didn't. I'm not talking to you.
I very distinctively didn't pick Jared Leto.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the people who tune in, and, you know, from the studios and that. Or one of them. Why Jared Leto? I mean, it's Morbius the bloody vampire. Now in my head is that scene from Suicide Squad where he's played the Joker and he's got all the weapons arrayed out neatly in alphabetical order around him. Yeah?
Where he's playing someone who dresses like the Joker.
Yeah, he's basically playing a white-faced clown. And he's basically lying down going, Now I've got a mental image of him as Morbius the vampire lying down surrounded by bats arranged in alphabetical order going, You know, I want to drink your blood.
Oh, you just know he's going to run around set with, like, plastic vampire teeth trying to bite people in the neck.
Yeah, and at some point, I guarantee he'll probably try and do the Sesame Street count. I will give you 3 seconds. One,
See, that just sounds like too whimsical for Jared Leto.
Yeah.
God, he's just...
But I wouldn't put it past him.
He's going to be so Jared Leto, he's going to just overact every single line.
Yeah. Also, back to the DC thing for a second. I forgot you mentioned Young Justice Outsiders. I'm happy about this. This one.
Oh, yeah, that is like probably the one thing I'm genuinely very excited for.
Yep.
Just like I was excited for Morbius the Vampire movie.
Yeah, but not anymore.
It's just he's so bad.
Yep, he is.
He's the worst thing in everything he does.
Yes, he is. Give me one second.
Have you seen that one in Blade Runner? Sorry. Where just Harrison Ford very obviously wants to punch him in the face? I think what sums up Jared Leto's acting career.
Yeah.
It's just that one scene in Blade Runner 2049.
Yes.
Where he is just hamming up the place, and you just see Harrison Ford very definitely not acting at all, with just this look of just, God, shut up. Shut up or I will punch you in the face.
Well, he needed to punch somebody, and he ended up punching, Ryan Gosling, was it?
Yeah. He punched the wrong person in that film.
Yes, he did. He apologised for it, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I actually forgot he genuinely punched him by accident.
Yep. Yes, he did.
God, I wish he'd genuinely punched Jared Leto by completely on purpose.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I mean, I guess the upside is at least I get Fight Club now.
You do not talk about Fight Club.
But can we talk about that one scene where Edward Norton just starts punching Jared Leto and doesn't stop?
Yes.
That's my favourite scene.
That's everyone's favourite scene. Except for the fans of Jared Leto. Because, yes, he does have fans. Of
course he does.
7 of them, in fact. I made that up, sorry. I can't say that with a straight face.
No, I'm sure there's a legion of, you know...
Is it the Legion of Doom?
Girls.
Yeah. Is it the Legion of Doom?
Yes, that's the real Legion of Doom.
They're all former wrestlers with spikes and everything.
Gorilla Grodd definitely has a 30 Seconds to Mars poster in his room.
Yes, he does. I'm imagining Gorilla Grodd as an emo kid. It's not working. He's got fur over one eye.
That is a good look.
Oh.
I really want someone to do just a scene in Gorilla City with an emo gorilla kid.
Do you think before he became Gorilla Grodd, he was Gorilla Goth?
Whatever, Mum, you can't tell me what to do. Literally, you can't because I can control minds.
Exactly.
No one understands me. God, I don't get it, Jared. Why can't I be like more like you? So pale and thin and hairless.
Yes. Anyway, very quickly before we take a break, I just want to get this off my chest, right? You know Fairy Tale.
I am vaguely aware of Fairy Tale, so I'm going to tap out and just leave this one to you.
No. You don't have to tap out. This will be very quick, right? Hiro Mashima's got a new manga out, right, called Eden Zero. And he did, like, a little crossover thing between Fairy Tale and Eden Zero. And Eden Zero has a guy who is a bit like the main character of Fairy Tale. It has a lass who's a bit like the main female character from Fairy Tale. It has a blue cat called Happy, who is also in Fairy Tale. It has a dog-type, man-type, small white thing with a cone nose called Plue, who is in like three of his series, Rare Master and Fairy Tale, and this now as well. And I read it, and I just want to throw this out there. You know, I know that other people have noticed this as well, but I need to stick my two cents in. Why? Can you not just do something completely different that doesn't rely on dragons or friendship, or, sorry, the power of friendship, or, you know, having the same characters that you've done in Fairy Tale to death being regurgitated again, including your character called Urza Scarlet, who in your new manga is called Elsie Crimson, and is kind of...
No, Rob, don't you see it? It's a fun reference.
It's not just a fun reference.
It has a very limited pool of ideas.
All I'm saying is Leiji Matsumoto would be very, very disappointed, and if Elsie Crimson ever met Queen Emeraldus, I know for a fact Queen Emeraldus would literally tear her apart for desecrating the memory of Harlech. So shame on you, Hiro Mashima, for desecrating my memories of Harlech. Arcadia of my youth, you know, will always be special. Sorry, you're not. Can we move on now?
I like Queen Emeraldus.
Exactly.
She's cool. She's the unponderable sorceress of space.
Exactly. And Harlech, I mean, how much more badass can you get than standing on top of your spaceship in space with your arms crossed and a rose between your teeth?
But that's not as badass as the power of a friendship.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, but every new romantic from the 80s, you know, looked at Harlech and went, I want to be him.
I would listen to Captain Harlech's, like, synth pop album.
Yeah, Captain Harlech's synth pop album would be amazing. You just know it.
Okay, quickly, to the recording suite.
Hello, I'm John McShane. I've just finished a book called Robert Burns in Edinburgh, an illustrated guide to the wonderful city up north, and you are listening to The Geek Show.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit? On Literary Loitering.
Hi, I'm Dave from Geek Corner. What you should do, if you like comics, is get yourselves along to our cool little comic book shop in Stockton-on-Tees in the Regency West Mall, where we stock a range of really cool independent comics. We actually have some really unique stuff that we are the only shop in the world to stock. You should definitely come along and check it out. Thanks very much, and get yourselves down to Stockton-on-Tees.
And welcome back to the show. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been reading. So, Rob, what have you been reading?
I've been reading a good manga.
That's good. I like those better than bad mangas.
Yeah, did you hear that, Hiro Mashima? I've been reading a good manga. So, yeah,
I don't think you did hear it.
I will say it louder and in smaller words at some point. I've been reading Volume 2 of Watakoi, Love is Hard for Otaku, by Fujita. And you remember I said Volume 1 was whimsical and kind of delightful, and if you're an adult, you'll definitely get the jokes, but if you're a teenager, you might not understand them as much, and that it was a comedy manga aimed at kind of our age group, Andrew, you know, aimed at people who had finished high school and college and uni and were working, and, you know, they had different lives. They didn't rely on the crutch of high school and all that mass of people thrown at them.
I'll allow it in this instance.
Right. I definitely said words to that effect.
No, it was more the our age group comment.
Oh, right.
Because there was a bit of space in between that we're missing out.
Yeah. Anyway, Watakoi continues to be this kind of delightful nonsense. It's it's wonderfully observational in its humor, right? And the opening pages are color pages, and it's all about how the two main characters, both of whom are otaku, but actually secretly dating each other. They're out on a date, but they're not allowed to use any otaku terminology when they're out on the date. They've got, you know, the guy is basically carrying this little piggy bank, which is kind of like a swear jar, but for otaku. So anytime they come out with an otaku reference or anything like that, they have to put money in the jar.
Like that, that is quite cute.
Yeah, and so, you know, she can't help but give these reactions, which make her look like Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star and various other characters, you know, and like Kaiji, things like that. And so she has to put money in the piggy bank. But, you know, it's weird because between these two characters, you can actually, as you're reading it, you can sense that there's a good relationship between them. And it's the same with, and those characters are Narumi Momose and Hirotaka Nifuji. And it's the same with their two friends, Hanako Koyanagi and Taro Kabakura. And where the first two are dating each other, the second two are also dating each other, and all four of them are friends. But you've got, on one side, you've got the otaku couple who are trying to be not as otaku around other people, and they have various methods to kind of keep people away from the fact that they're otaku. And then you have the other couple who are basically jocks. And one of the great things about this, you know, when you get that situation where you might be secretly dating somebody, or somebody you know is dating somebody, and then you have, you know, it'll be like a bunch of guys around a table and everyone's talking about who they fancy or something like that. And then the guy who's dating whoever is the target of the guy's conversation is slowly getting more and more frustrated because they're talking about his girlfriend. And he just wants to say, "She's my girlfriend. Why are you talking about her?" You know?
Yeah, I feel like I'm not overly familiar with that situation. Because I do not live inside a lighthearted sitcom.
Yeah, this is true. But one of the wonderful things about this is that it's that kind of situation early on in the manga. But what you've got is this weird situation where the otaku guy, right, when they're talking about his girlfriend, all you can see around him is sparkles, you know, because he is the boyfriend of the girl that they're saying is really cute and they'd love to date her. And because he's an otaku, he counts himself lucky to have a girlfriend. So he's really pleased about the fact that people have noticed that his girlfriend's cute, right? Whereas the jock, on the other hand, when they start talking about his girlfriend, he's getting really jealous and really frustrated that he can't turn around and say, "Stop talking about my girlfriend." And I love the different reaction between the two of them. You know, it's one of those little observational things that just makes this such a wonderful read. I've really got to bring this for you, Andrew, because I think you'll enjoy it. It's lighthearted, it's whimsical, it's got some brilliant observations about the relationships between men, between guys, between women, and between men and women. You know, it's really, really good.
But does it have wacky hijinks?
It does have wacky hijinks as well.
Do you have a weakness for wacky hijinks?
I mean, there's one brilliant one where the otaku guy, normally he wears glasses, right? But he's decided to give contacts a try for a change, only to realize that contacts probably aren't the best choice for him. I mean, he runs into some real problems because he thinks he's talking to his girlfriend, but he's actually talking to another guy who headbutts him when he grabs him and starts trying to give him a kiss.
I will put a tick next to that as an acceptable level of wacky hijinks.
Yes. So yeah, Watakoi by Fujita. There is an anime adaptation of this, which I think is either just finished airing or is still airing. I think it's just finished airing. But that has been delightful as well. It's a very good adaptation and a very good manga. I'm really enjoying it. Over to you.
Good stuff.
Yes, over to you.
Yep. So I have been reading Moon Knight Volume 1, but is actually Volume God Knows What. Crazy Runs in the Family, which is written by Max Bemis with art by Jason Burroughs.
See, I love the title, Crazy Runs in the Family.
It is a good title. So this, despite being Volume 1, carries on pretty much directly from the Jeff Lemire Moon Knight.
All right. Excellent.
Because at the end of that series, Moon Knight, he basically worked out how to live with all of his multiple personalities. So, you know, Mark Spector, Stephen Grant, Jake Lockley, and the Moon God Khonshu.
Yes.
And so this picks up after that with the idea of showing that, like, now all his personalities work in tandem. So you've got Mark Spector, who is kind of the leader, kind of going out and fighting crime as Moon Knight. Then you've got Stephen Grant, you know, billionaire business tycoon.
Yeah.
Who basically, you know, goes out and earns enough money for them to keep on doing what they're doing. And then Jake Lockley, who, like, is basically reserved as the nuclear option.
So I have to ask, do they have, like, a rota for which of the personalities is going to make breakfast or something?
You know, I wouldn't put it past them.
Because it would be a very Moon Knight thing, wouldn't it?
It would. I can see that happening. So yeah, Mark's doing that. He's doing pretty well. But thrown into that is a new enemy for him who calls himself Var. And he is a man who is either some kind of like mutant or inhuman. He's got pyrokinetic abilities. And kind of much like Mark believes himself to be the avatar of Khonshu, he believes himself to be kind of the earthly reincarnation of the sun god Ra.
See, when you said Ra, I thought, is he trying to be scary and just run up to people going, Ra?
He should team up with Colossus.
Exactly.
Because then they could be Ra, Ra, Rasputin.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, Ra has decided, because in the mythology, I think Khonshu is like Ra's disobedient son.
Yeah.
So, you know, he said he needs to teach Mark Spector some good old-fashioned discipline.
Is he going to spank Mark Spector?
Oh, no, if only. Because, unfortunately, he just found out, well, I was going to say Mark, but specifically Jake Lockley's deepest, darkest secret. Because it turns out Moon Knight maybe has a daughter.
Oh?
Yes, that is the appropriate response. Just the classic, whoa? But yeah, because it does go back to what you said, is they kind of do have a voter system.
Yeah.
Where each one of them gets some time to be in control. And Jake's been using his to basically hook back up with their girlfriend Marlene and, you know, have a child. So Moon Knight now has to deal with his own personality issues, but also learning how to be a dad.
And when you say he's got a daughter, how old is the daughter?
Yes. She's indeterminate child age.
She's indeterminate child age. The only reason I'm asking is because sometimes they give you a definite age for the daughter. I mean, Ant-Man, we had a definite age for his daughter. And I'm just worried that Mark won't be able to cope with his multiple personality disorder and having to change pooey nappies.
She's older than that.
Right, that's what I was worried about, you know, because that's not good for somebody suffering from MPD. Having to change nappies at that time in the morning, especially extra smelly ones.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to get all the stuff in the van, you know, make sure she gets to school on time, and then go to the deserted desert island to have, you know, a big climactic battle with your insane cult leader, maybe dad.
Yeah, and then make it back in time for, like, some kind of sports practice where you have to be there, because otherwise it would look awkward and your daughter might start getting bullied at school because her dad didn't turn up to her sports practice.
See, the thing is, based on this book, that is entirely a thing that could happen.
Exactly. I mean, when he's fighting Rad, is he just going to say, look, can we stop at, like, you know, 2:30? I've got to go pick my daughter up from school. You don't know what parking's like.
No, but there is a fun bit where he has to fight Ra, but he's only got his mask. So he ends up fighting him in a mask and kind of a shirt and tie, like the Mr. Knight look. But instead of a crisp white suit, he's just wearing that and his boxes.
See, when you started with the shirt and tie, when you said he's just got his mask, I was thinking, hang on, is the rest of him naked? Where's the mask then? And then you said the shirt and tie, I was thinking, oh, safe. But then you went with boxes.
Yep, what a journey we've been on. But yeah, this book, I think it can be a little bit jarring because this, I would say it's probably a lot more lighthearted than the previous Moon Knight series has been.
Yeah.
Because it's lots of very quippy, bantery dialogue. And I think it is kind of, it's very Joss Whedon-esque.
Marvel have been doing a lot of that kind of quippy, bantery dialogue, and they've been doing some really good things with it recently, haven't they?
Yeah, they're definitely good, but I would say probably, I think it works better for some characters than others.
Yeah, because don't forget, I remember like the 90s Moon Knight, late 80s, 90s Moon Knight, when he was basically just dying horribly and slowly because he had that strange disease which was killing him.
Well, he got better.
Yeah. Well, no, he got rebooted.
This is a good, interesting book. It's kind of quite trippy. Like, I think we've talked about some of Max Bemis's work before.
Yeah.
He does do this quite kind of meta, out there stuff. Like, there's a lot of stuff about kind of shaping reality just by the strength of your own imagination and what you believe in.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's good. It's like, I think that's one of my favorite things about Moon Knight, is it's a series where it's like the writers writers and artists get a lot of freedom to just, you know, bring their own vision to it.
Yeah.
They're not constrained by saying, you know, Moon Knight has to be X and Y.
And the way you've been describing this version of Moon Knight, it reminded me a little bit of, remember you were talking about Doom Patrol ages ago?
Yeah, it is quite similar to Doom Patrol.
Yeah, and so I think possibly if you like Doom Patrol, you might want to give this a try.
I think so. Also, I love Moon Knight's design.
Hmm, yeah.
Like, I think especially here, because Jason Burroughs, he's gone back to kind of Moon Knight's older costume, but I think it works as just like this really stark and simple figure.
Yeah.
Because like where everything's quite, you know, detailed and dark. And then Moon Knight is literally just like this massive flash of white light.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I've always liked about him. He was never, because everyone kept saying Moon Knight is basically Marvel's Batman. And you're like, well, he kind of has the opposite effect, though. Batman's like in the darkness. That's why he wears like really dark colors. And Marvel have their own version of Batman, but it's not Moon Knight.
I mean, to be fair, Marvel have quite a few Batmen. It's like, you've got Nighthawk, you've got Moon Knight, you've got Daredevil, who I would say is like properly Marvel's Batman.
Yeah.
Also, like, having a cape with a hood is just a cool look.
Yes.
Every superhero should have one.
Well, I don't know, because, you know, The Incredibles...
Spider-Man needs a cape with a hood.
The Incredibles do tell us, well, Edna Mode in The Incredibles does tell us, no capes.
What if maybe they're just not good enough heroes?
There is that.
Captain America needs a cape. Iron Man should have a cape.
You don't want those articles.
The right? Hulk should have a cape.
The Hulk had a cape.
Like a Bruce Banner size cape.
No, the Hulk had a cape when he was Maestro.
Of course he did.
Yes, because, you know, he's a supervillain. Supervillains generally go with capes, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Oh my God, Superman has a cape. But Injustice proved that Superman is probably the worst.
I feel like maybe the everyone in a cape is a supervillain has some big holes as a theory.
Yeah, yes it does. Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Right. I've been reading something interesting, and this is from NBM Graphic Novels. Now, I'm not even going to try and pronounce what the NB and M stand for, but NBM Graphic Novels have a tendency to put out some really interesting stuff. This is a graphic novel called Hasib and the Queen of Serpents by David B. Now, David B. is one of France's, according to the blurb about him in the back of the book, anyway, David B. is one of France's finest cartoonists and a co-founder of the legendary L'Association Collective. He is the author of many books of comics, including The Armed Garden, Nocturnal Conspiracies, and Epileptic, which was awarded the Angoulême International Comics Festival Prize for Scenario and the Ignatz Award for Outstanding Artist. So, yeah. Hasib and the Queen of Serpents. It's a hardback with gold lettering, you know? It's got gold lettering. The artwork, the art style is kind of... It's a bit strange because it takes some aspects of, you know, the pictures from, like, Persia and Greece and places like that, you know, that you see from ancient Greece and ancient Persia and ancient Syria and stuff like that, yeah?
Yes, it's a mosaic-y stuff.
Well, not just mosaic-y stuff. You know how they depicted humans and beasts and stuff like that. The artwork is very reminiscent and very much inspired by that form of art, right? And the story is basically about about a sage, a man who knew, who was on the verge of knowing all the secrets of the world. But he set out after, you know, he left his wife behind and set out to learn the rest of the secrets in the world. But there was a massive storm. All his books disappeared. He was only left with 5 pages, which when he made it home, he basically locked the 5 pages in a box and told his wife that he was going to die. She would have a son, told her what his son would be called, and said, when he reaches a certain age, when he asks about why I left, give him the box, tell him to read the pages, then he'll understand everything and he'll be the wisest man in the world. But what actually happens instead is that things don't work out the way people want. Hasib grows up and he's a bit of a slacker, and he gets a job as a lumberjack, people betray him, yada, yada, yada. And it's very much of an old-school fable. It's an old-school fable in graphic novel form. But the thing is, I think that possibly out of all of us, I'm probably the best person to cover this book. And I think that it got left to me because you guys didn't want to do it. But I think that's a happy coincidence, because this deals a lot with Judeo-Christian, early Judeo-Christianism, and also, sorry, early Judeo-Christianity, sorry, and also it deals a lot with Islam.
So in essence, Rob, what you're saying is that, well, initially you thought you saw nothing but random chance and chaos, you now realise perhaps it was all part of a larger plan.
No, I still believe coincidence. Chance, I reckon, is probably more at work than anything else, because chance has 99% of the votes in any situation. This has...
But I feel like we can't completely discount the idea that maybe I am actually God.
Well, if Elon Musk isn't God, then it's difficult to say that you are. But then again, if you were God, you've done an amazing job at convincing people that you're not.
Part of the plan.
This basically goes into real kind of old school fable territory when the Queen of Serpents rears her head and starts telling Hasib certain stories to pass the time because he's trapped. And so you have these, you know, stories being told, and the stories themselves are really fascinating stories about kings and princes and journeys, and, you know, there's love and tragedy and all sorts of things. It's got basically everything. It's got an evil grand vizier with a giant turban on his head.
Of course it does.
Yeah, who wants to steal King Solomon's ring because reasons, you know.
Is it so that he can use the genie's wish to make himself immortal?
Basically, yeah. And there's some amazing panel work in this when it comes to depicting a long kind of journey or a long progress. One of them is kind of, it shows, it's kind of like a Bayeux tapestry, but it's done in kind of a square spiral with it reaching the center, you know, and just applying that kind of creativity to the panels as well, is really cool. This is, I've got to say, I'm surprised at how good this is. I didn't expect it to be as absorbing as it is. I didn't expect it to be as engaging as it is. I thought it was going to be quite bland and boring, and I'm happy to say that it's not. I like my folklore. I like my mythology. I like my my ancient lore and everything like that. It's what I grew up with, and it was a real hobby of mine for a long time. And this really took me back to those days, you know, when I was just reading like old, really old fairy tales and researching all sorts of stuff because I had an interest in it. And that's why I say, you know, maybe it's a happy coincidence that this came to me, because it, you know, I took
maybe you really were stuck in a boat with the tiger all along.
See, this is the thing. If you wanted to liken it to that particular movie, I would say nay, you know, because I'm not really a fan of that film.
What's wrong with Life of Pi?
Well, you know, it just wasn't tasty. Pie should be tasty and good with custard.
Look, I'm just saying, you've got to be nice about it, because otherwise you'll make him angry, and you won't like him when he's angry.
How long have you been working on that?
Ever since I stole it from a Stuart Lee routine.
Oh, right, okay. So you've been waiting to do that joke for years then?
Yeah, years of just going, I'm having that, and putting it away in my pocket.
Was it worth it now? Was it worth it?
No.
You feel hollow and empty inside now, don't you?
I do feel hollow and empty inside.
Oh, anyway.
Much like one of my favourite protagonists, fires, I'm stealing it.
I was going to say, steal away.
Because to close us out, I have been reading Volume 10 of Vinland Saga.
Hooray! You've been waiting a while for this.
Yep, and here's my review of it. Yes, all right, I guess.
Is it starting to lose its steam, though?
No, I'm joking. It's still very, very good indeed. Because this volume finds Thorfinn. He's basically been dragged into a war between two different factions of the Jomsvikings, who are basically like the king's elite fighting force, of whom Thorfinn's father was a member before he decided to abandon it all for a life of peace. And then he got murdered.
Yes, he did.
And yeah, it definitely feels like things are coming to a head. I think we're getting close to probably another big turning point in the story. Because the idea is that this one side of the Jomsvikings, who are kind of the rebels, they want Thorfinn to lead them because, you know, he's basically the rightful heir to lead the group.
Yeah, he's the son of the Troll of Jom.
Yep. Rest in peace, Thors.
He was amazing.
He was. And anyway, trying to convince Thorfinn to fight, they basically tell him that Floki, who is the current leader of the Jomsvikings, was the man who ordered Thor's death. And, like, you just get this amazingly heartbreaking moment where Thorfinn realizes that, like, everything he said about how violence is never the right path and how you should always try and find another option. Like, he just realizes, okay, but if I were to actually meet Floki now, I would just murder him in a heartbeat because I don't have the strength to follow my own convictions.
See, how many other comics or manga are you going to get that kind of a development for a character?
It's so great because it's like, it's not just, you know, questioning the Viking way of life. It's subverting something that's like a really common trope in fiction.
Yeah.
This idea of you've killed my father and now I must have my revenge.
Yeah, Inigo Montoya, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is Thorfinn saying, no, hold on, that's not at all what my dad would want.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't care about that in the slightest.
No, he wouldn't.
And I wish I could be as strong as him. So basically this volume is Thorfinn trying to do his best to just kind of get out of this situation before he's put in a position where he's going to do something he'll regret.
See, the thing I love about Vinland Saga is that characters like Thorfinn, their reactions to situations are very human. You know, it's not something that is suddenly out of the blue. They don't act out of character, do they?
No, they don't. Everyone, like, has very clear motivations and lines that they're following.
And not only that, I mean, I think it keeps, like, the Deus Ex Machina at a very low ebb. You know, things don't just suddenly happen because the author wants them to happen.
No, yeah, like there is a clear build to each point.
It's like, what's his face? I forgot the lass's name. You know, the lass who's with Thorfinn. Oh, she's running off with Thorfinn. Not in that way, but you know what I mean.
Well, that's two now, because there's like... There's Gudri, who is the runaway.
Yeah, Gudrid.
And now also Hild, who is like...
Yeah.
Following Thorfinn and is like, okay, if you ever break your vow, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Gudrid is it? Her husband, technically. I love the way that it has the, you know, that the author has basically plotted his journey as well.
Yes, I look, because that continues in this book as well. It's like he's on this weird, wacky side quest.
Yeah, and he's not linked to the main story in any way. But I love the fact that he hasn't been forgotten.
Yeah, and I really like that he's not just going to like reappear at some point. You know, it's going to be like, and now I will have my revenge.
Yeah.
Like, you get to see him have to go on this journey, which has its own hardships and its own little adventures.
Yeah. And at the back of it all, you know that Canute could turn up at any point, just basically saying, look, Thorfinn, I need you to come and be a killer for me again.
Oh, yeah, Canute is a sneaky boy.
Yep.
Because basically, we find out that this whole fight with the Jomsvikings is actually... Well, it's very strongly implied that Canute has organised this himself.
Yeah.
And actually poisoned the previous head of the Jomsvikings.
Yeah.
Because you get a scene about half a year before the events of this book where he's out hunting and they find that all the animals in the forest have been wiped out by a savage band of wolves. And he comes up with this idea that if you take out the alpha, the other wolves are just going to tear each other apart trying to replace it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the obvious implication being that the Jomsvikings, they are like the wolves kind of pillaging all the nearby areas. And so he's concocted this entire plan to, you know, to wipe them out.
Yeah.
But if only there was a character in Vinland Saga who was that battle hungry that he would happily just keep the war going no matter which side he got pointed at.
See, this is, again...
Even allying with the other sides, just keep the fight going.
This again, did you think he would end up like that?
No, I just love the fact that Thorkell keeps turning up.
Yeah.
And every time it's just this obsessive, let's just keep this fight going.
See, what I love about Thorkell is that he's a nuanced character in a certain way, right? But he's a very one-dimensional character, you know, at heart. He's basically just a one-trick pony. But that trick is done so well every single time.
Yeah, because I think it's that idea that he's very simple.
Yeah.
In that, like, all he wants is to fight.
Everyone makes the same mistake.
A good way of playing, like, showing that that is both great for, like, comedic fodder.
Yeah.
And also, this kind of, like, there's a tragedy to it.
Yeah.
Like, he has no idea what to do with his life unless he's in the middle of a battle.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, what I love about it are those flashes of intelligence that he uses, that he has, that keep catching people off guard. Because with Thorkell, what I love is that he embodies the idea that simple isn't the same as stupid.
Oh, yeah, you're certainly not dumb.
Yeah.
And also, what I think I really like about this volume is it also, it's not so much like a new side of him, but it really helps to reinforce the idea, like, as much as we love this character, as like this hilarious sort of comic relief guy.
Yeah.
He's also kind of a villain.
Yeah, he is.
Because, like, he is happy to both kill and send people to their deaths just so he can keep on having his fun.
Yeah.
And also what I like is there's a new character introduced in this volume who kind of almost acts as a mirror to Thorkell.
Is this the spear guy?
Yeah, Garm.
Yeah, Garm.
It was like, again, like Thorkell, he is a ridiculously skilled fighter and is also actually as fast as Thorfinn as well.
Yeah.
And like, to start off with, he comes off as this, like, ridiculous, really laid-back dude who just, like, casually saunters up to places to be like, hey, want to fight?
But,
as the volume goes on,
yeah,
you find out, oh, no, wait, he's not laid back because he's a fun, chill dude. He's laid back because the only way his life has meaning is this idea of trying to find someone who will one day kill him in battle.
Yeah.
Because as a Viking, he has been brought up and has really, like, accepted the idea that a Viking's life only has meaning if they die in glorious battle.
Do you know what I love about Vinland Saga, though? Right? What I really love about Vinland Saga. Garm, right? Garm is is the hound that guards the gates of hell in Norse mythology, isn't he?
Yes, yes, he is.
Have you ever Googled Thorkell the Tall?
I have not, no.
Because Thorkell the Tall apparently was a prominent member of the Jomsviking Order and a notable lord and an actual person.
Well, yeah, they're all based off, like, real people.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, this is the thing I love most about Vinland Saga, is that a lot of the characters or a lot of the kind of aspects of the story are based either in Norse mythology or an actual history.
Yeah, well, it is, like, in theory, a historical epic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, do you know what I like?
What?
That despite all this, like, serious introspection, it's super goofy.
Yes. Yes.
Like, there's this great bit where, like, Garm and Thorkell and Thorfinn meet, and Garm's, like, doing his big monologue about how they're going to face each other in battle, and only one of them's going to walk away from this, be the ultimate contest of who is worthy of living. And then he looks back and Thorfinn's just booked it.
Yeah, he's run away. And Garm's standing there. I love the look on Garm's face when he realizes what's happened.
Yeah, just the shit could just... What?
Yeah.
But also there are some like super dark jokes in this volume as well.
Yes.
Like you've got this bit at the start of the battle, but literally the first page is the defenders like of the main Yom's Vikings firing off a big catapult, and then it cuts to one of the invaders. There's a man called Pops talking about how this is going to be his last battle. He's 45 now. All he cares about is earning enough money to buy some sweets for his grandkid. Kasplat.
Yeah.
And just like that whole thing with the guy seeing his brothers on the opposing side trying to get his attention.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous joke.
It's so dark as well.
So dark.
Oh.
Another good volume. And also even better.
Yeah.
But we get a nice big interview with Makoto Yukimura at the back of it.
Yes.
And it's just, he is just a fascinating man to listen to. Because he has such like a lackadaisical, laid-back way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he has this great line. Like the idea of why sort of growing up in an education system is kind of bad. Because it makes you obsessed with this idea of competition.
Mm.
You've always got to like measure yourself against grades. And say like, if I am not achieving this, then I am doing life wrong. And just eventually learning and saying, no, just everyone has their own way of measuring success.
Yeah.
Also, like one of the really fascinating things he says is that there's a bit of insight into how good an artist he is. He starts talking about how like one of the real signs of a person's personality is their hands. And actually, I went back through afterwards and flicked through and you just see like all the detail he puts into people's hands.
Mm.
It's like you've got characters like Thorkeller, obviously, they're covered in scars and bruises from their battles. And then Thorfinn, he's got like quite rough, leathery hands from years of working the fields. But then other characters like Balder, who is Floki's grandson, he's like kind of led quite a rich, pampered lifestyle. And so he's got really soft, delicate hands. And like there's even bits of like holding a sword. And you can go back and see like, actually, he's got a really bad grip on that sword.
Yeah.
God, I love the attention to detail.
See, I've known Makoto Yukimura's got that kind of attention to detail from Planet S, which was his first manga, and is really good as well.
Anyway, I feel like I will end this with pretty much what I say every time I feature a volume of Vinland Saga, which just go read Vinland Saga.
Yeah. You know, what are you waiting for? Just read it. Go about, buy it, read it.
I mean, this is over now, so you don't have any excuse.
Yeah. Yeah, just...
Clear off, get out of here.
You'll find Vinland Saga on Amazon and places like that. Just go, buy it. There's 10 volumes, buy them all. You won't regret it.
Yes, get them in the lovely, like, hardback editions as well.
Oh, God, yes. So nice, aren't they?
It is. It's just a lovely thing to read.
Yeah. It's got that weight to it as well, and you know, with the hardback and everything, you just read it, and it's such a satisfying experience reading it.
It is. Like, it definitely adds a certain something.
Yeah. So yeah, go buy Vinland Saga. We're going away now. Other shows are available on our website, Apple Podcasts and Audioboom. Contact us via our Twitter, which is Andrew.
@4PanelPodcast.
Or email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. If you're going to find us on other social media, look for The Geek Show. We've been 4Panel. Until next time, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
Go buy Vinland Saga.
Yes, go. Shoo. Off with you. And also, thanks for listening.